I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, I need you to pay close attention to this message. It is not an ad. This is about Canada Land, and this is about you. You need to know that the news crisis is about to get a lot worse. You've heard about the layoffs. We're about to have news closures, and it's very likely that we're going to be seeing the defunding of the CBC. Where are you going to get your information from? What can you do about this? You can support Canada Land. We need you to. And so for this month and this month only, you can become a Canada Land supporter and get everything our supporters get for just $2 a month. That is an almost 80% discount. The clock is ticking on this. It disappears at the end of the month, and then we will not offer it. We need your support. We need to keep news coverage alive in Canada. Go right now to canadaland.com/join. And thank you. This episode is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. It's never an easy call with so many problems in the world to know where to direct the money that you donate when you want to help out in this world. But what I can tell you is that when you donate to CAMH, you're saving lives. We know about the opioid crisis. We know about the mental health crisis. They are doing the work. Help change mental health care forever. Your support will help CAMH build a future where no one is left behind. Donate at CAMH.ca/CanadaLand to help us treat addiction and build hope. Okay, two big media stories I want to touch on. Two media stories that you have been asking us to look into. One is about a documentary you may never see, and one about a huge media scandal you might not know about. And we're going to approach them both a little bit differently this week. Welcome to Shortcuts. This episode of Shortcuts is brought to you by Michael Miles, Brian Bancroft, Angus Bell, Alan Morantz, Mark Krechen, Thomas Hawk, Brad Johnson, Joseph Clark, Ben Thronson, Craig, and Mark Wells. Mark, why did you decide to be awesome?
I do it because I figured somebody's got to pay this guy, and may as well be me.
This episode is also brought to you by Sure Design T-shirts. Sure Design T-shirts is a company based in Chiang Mai, Thailand, and they make these unique, crinkly cotton t-shirts that are incredibly soft and stretchy, and they sport these really intricate, interesting, graphical, and sometimes tribal designs that are worth a look. One happy customer describes Sure Design's t-shirts as unreasonably soft and comfortable. Sure Design T-shirts does custom printing in the United States, and if you have your own store or yoga studio here in Canada, you can order wholesale and get product shipped internationally. There are lots of designs on this website. The designs that I liked best were these vintage beer logos, beer brands from around the world. This isn't like vintage Budweiser. This is international beer brands on T-shirts, vintage logos. Check it out at their website, suredesigntshirts.com. This episode is brought to you by Douglas, a mattress trusted by more than 200,000 Canadians from coast to coast to coast. Trust is important. There are a lot of mattress lies out there, a lot of mattress liars. And I didn't intend the pun, but it occurred to me that there is one as I was saying those words. Listen, I am not lying to you. I have experienced the Douglas mattress. It is an exceptional mattress at a surprisingly affordable price point. It is a mattress that sleeps cool, doesn't have that weird thing in the summer where the mattress gets like an oven. It's a very good product. It's delivered to your house in a box. You don't have to go to a big mattress store. It is a medium firm mattress, which is what Canadians prefer. And it comes with a 365-night trial and a 20-year warranty. What more can I tell you? Douglas is giving our listeners a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's amazing the things that we tell ourselves to talk ourselves out of getting help. Anybody who's actually gotten help knows that the process of getting things off your chest, of taking your stressors, your problems, and just like not letting them be bottled up, working through just conveying them to somebody, half of the battle is just doing that. You unburden yourself. And you know what? If you have a real mental health professional, no, they don't have magic bullets or magic words that make it all go away. But often they can help you see things a little bit differently and guide you to strategies or tools or to a new perspective that actually does help. As the largest online therapy provider in the world, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Because you listen to this podcast, you get 10% off of your first month at betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. That's betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. Okay, first topic today is something that I have no tape to play you. And in fact, I got nobody to talk about it with. It's a mystery. It was reported by Robert Benzie in the Toronto Star that this documentary commissioned by TV Ontario about Kathleen Wynne will likely never be seen. And a lot of you have been urging me to look into this, to investigate this, to talk about this. And it is proving, so far impossible to get anybody involved on the record about this. Something important may have happened here. Roxana Spicer, veteran documentary producer, was working with the, you know, somewhat legendary documentary director functioning as a producer in this respect, Peter Raymond, and she got very close access to Kathleen Wynne for this documentary called Premiere, The Unscripted Kathleen Wynne. So what happened? About a month ago, Roxana Spicer, the director, and her team screened parts of this documentary for Kathleen Wynne's advisors. And these advisors, upon seeing the footage, refused to sign release forms. Now, there's so much that needs to be unpacked there. Like, in what journalistic context do you need release forms of the subject of the journalism? I mean, nobody would ever sign a release form of footage that makes them look bad. But this is documentary production, and a lot of people don't realize this. You see a news report on TV, you see something that looks more like a documentary on the Fifth Estate at W5, or you see a feature documentary on TVO. I think a lot of people just, it looks like the same thing. It looks like different versions of nonfiction news reporting, and, you know, just the length is what distinguishes one from the other. But the legal framework that these different types of journalism exist within are vastly different. And when you're doing a documentary that a production company is commissioned to produce and deliver to a broadcaster like TVO, part of that contract is that they have to have release forms from the subject signed, and that is a requisite for errors and omission insurance, libel protection insurance. And in effect, what that means in many cases, and in this case, obviously, is that the person who the documentary is about gets a veto. They get to basically say whether or not the documentary can be aired or not. And that is a big problem for any kind of journalism. Now, I don't know exactly what happened in this case. Robert Benzie, I think, covered this quite well as he could. What it seems happened is that Kathleen Wynne and her people agreed to have these cameras following them around, and they had one idea of what the documentary was about. And what they were told it was about, what it was supposed to be about, was a behind-the-scenes look at the preparation of their budget. As fascinating as that sounds, that was the original scope of the documentary. Does that mean that Roxana Spicer was lying, that she actually had some surreptitious other agenda? We don't know that, and I doubt it very much. That's what happens when you show up with cameras, things happen, and that's sort of when, you know, journalism can occur. When you have that kind of access and something important happens, that's what you kind of hope for. And it sounds like that's what happened, because the actual documentary that they ended up putting together ended up having a lot to do with a by-election in Sudbury in February that is now the subject of an Ontario provincial police probe into allegations that the Liberal Party tried to bribe Andrew Olivier to not run for the Liberal candidacy. So you're there to cover the lead up to a budget, and you actually end up getting incredible footage of a scandal as it is happening, or what later becomes a scandal. Now, I do not necessarily fault the Wynn administration if they have a veto on that footage. If you come to them and say, hey, we have all this scandalous footage that might even incriminate people. I mean, I don't know. I'm speculating here. Who knows what this footage is about? It sounds very likely that this is newsworthy footage that these journalists captured on camera, and then they go and ask Kathleen Wynn and her people, will you sign off on it? Well, no, they're going to say no. Now, I will ding them for misrepresenting themselves. I mean, their response to this is that they're not trying to stifle it at all. They would never try to stifle it. Kathleen Wynn herself, coming under fire because she's made a big noise about transparency, she said, no, that's not our intention. We knew this was going to be independent, as it should be, but there was a scope of this project. There was a scope, and they stepped outside of the scope. And I think that's where the discussion is right now. So, I mean, to that, what can you say? That is exerting editorial control. I had one idea of the documentary I wanted to be in. They made a different documentary that I don't want to be in. So I am going to not sign these forms and therefore not allow this footage to be released. You are stifling the documentary. You are being less than transparent. That's just what you're doing. But who can expect her to do otherwise? It seems that Spicer was asked to eliminate the controversial footage, which seems to be the most relevant and interesting footage from this, and she wouldn't do that, and she stepped away from the project, which is to her credit. All that she will say to the press is that all I'm going to say about that at this time is that I couldn't deliver a documentary that was consistent with TVO's standards of editorial integrity and independence. So in order to get the documentary in, she couldn't deliver one that she felt was independent and had editorial integrity. So that speaks volumes. What I am very frustrated about is that I can't get the journalists involved in this to talk to me. Roxana Spicer won't talk to me. Why? Because she signed an NDA. She signed a non-disclosure agreement with White Pines Pictures, Peter Raymond's company, and that prohibits her from speaking about this. Now, on the one hand, I can totally understand that, and why should she put herself in a position to be sued? On the other hand, a journalist signing an NDA and putting herself in a position where, as far as I can tell, it seems like she witnessed some newsworthy stuff. She documented, she covered newsworthy information. So there is arguably a responsibility to the public to report that stuff. What does a journalist exist to do? But she is legally bound. And not to put this all on Roxana Spicer, because this is just how documentaries get made. And we're seeing again and again that the legal framework within which documentaries are produced can and does stop them from getting aired, especially when they are not made by news organizations that have clout. The news organizations are increasingly commissioning these documentaries from third-party production companies. That's just how it's done. There was a period where it was done both in-house and externally at the CBC. Now it is only being done externally. Guys, this is not an isolated incident when it comes to documentaries. It seems to be a more and more frequent area of coverage for Canadaland, be it the Koch brothers documentary that Global pulled, or the Voluntourism documentary that the CBC re-edited when there were licensing problems, permission problems that were kind of dubious with the Kielbergers, the Scientology documentary that never got aired here. We were told it was licensing and copyright. This is happening again and again. What it amounts to is we don't get to see these documentaries, at least not as they were originally meant to be seen. So I don't know. I am here alone in my studio talking about this because Roxana Spicer and Peter Raymond, they can't or won't talk to me. I'm here hashing this out by myself. I don't think I should be. I think we need to have a conversation about how documentaries can be made differently. And if anybody has any ideas about who I should be speaking about or what I should be speaking about, please let me know, because this seems to be happening just about every other week.
De choc dans le milieu journalistique, une enquête de la presse révèle que le journaliste et chroniqueur François Bouguingo aurait fabriqué de faux reportages.
Très grave, qui est très rare et qui peut potentiellement porter atteinte à toute la profession.
François Bouguingo was a freelance reporter for 98.5. He was a contributor to its afternoon radio show. The station, rather, released a statement today saying it has suspended Bouguingo. The move comes after a report in La Presse alleging the reporter had fabricated and embellished some of his stories dating back to 1993. Today, on his Facebook page, Bouguingo has denied the allegations.
Perhaps you're like me and you had never heard the name François Bouguingo a week ago. Perhaps you still don't know who that is. I have just learned about the existence of this person who was the most famous foreign correspondent in French Canada. This is one of those situations where I don't even know whether or not to say alleged, because he himself has owned up to some of these inconsistencies, and other problems with this journalism that have been pointed out seem to be so rock solid. He seems to have been exposed as a fraud, at least to some degree. So a little background. He is a native of Congo. He moved to Canada in 1997. By his own bio, he covered virtually every conflict of the last 15 years. Rwanda, Algeria, Colombia, Iraq, Yugoslavia, Afghanistan, Congo. He filed stories on TV, in print, radio, the TVA network, Journal de Montréal, 98.5 FM. These are big news organizations in French Canada. And as the story was breaking, the CBC's Katie O'Malley asked for a little bit of context on Twitter. Like, can somebody give me an English language equivalent as to how big a deal Bugingo is? And some people said, you know, Neil MacDonald. Other people said, well, Neil MacDonald, you know, he's not as much of a personality as Bugingo was. What about Christy Blatchford? And then somebody else said, yeah, but Christy Blatchford, a lot of people hate her, a lot of people love her. Bugingo was just, he was famous, he was not controversial, and he was, as one journalist guessed, the name that would come up if you stopped a French-speaking Canadian on the street and said, name a foreign correspondent. He has since been suspended by all of those organizations who are now investigating his work because of an expose by Isabelle Haché of La Presse. My French is non-existent, so analyzing the media's response to this breaking story does not seem like the way to go. Instead, I've got Isabelle Haché with me now. Allô, bonjour, Isabelle. Can you give us an idea of just who he is?
He was very famous here in Quebec. He's very good on TV. I mean, he's very charming and he's very good. He's, most of the time he's analyzing the international affairs. So he doesn't say that he went there and there and there. He's just doing like what happened everywhere in the world. So there's no problem about that and he's good at that. But sometimes when you talk about what he did himself, was not really true, or not true at all.
And it was almost like kind of an adventurous, globe-trotting foreign correspondent in war zones, I mean, and for many years, right?
Well, he says that he was in Libya in 2012, in July 2012, and he was in Misrata, a town in Libya, where he witnessed the execution of a torturer of the old regime. And it wasn't true. I asked him, well, you were in Misrata, and said, no, I've never been there. And I said, are you sure? I read about that in the Journal de Montréal. And he said, no, I wasn't there. So I told him, don't you remember the militia in Misrata who killed the torturer there in front of your eyes? And he said, no, I just, maybe I read it somewhere. So things like that. He said that he covered every major conflict since 20 years. But when you try to find those news reports, where did you publish it? There are nowhere to be found. I mean, they're not there.
Anecdotally, he says, I covered this, I covered that. But when you go looking for the stories of him here reporting from Rwanda during the genocide in 94, you couldn't find any stories that prove that to be true. He says that he negotiated with Al-Qaeda terrorists in Mauritania to release journalists who were taken hostage in 2010, because he is the vice president of Reporters Without Borders.
Yeah, he was vice president. That's true that he was vice president of Reporters Without Borders. But what is not true is that he went to Mauritania in 2010 to negotiate the liberation of a journalist who was, as he claimed, hostage by Al-Qaeda. That's not true. And he told it.
I see.
I mean, he told me, no, it wasn't an hostage. But he said, yes, I went there anyway. And I said, why? And he said, I spoke to people in Al-Qaeda people there. And I asked him why. And he said, I won't tell you. I won't tell you because I'm writing a book right now and you're going to sing the book. So that was his line. Every time I asked him something that he didn't want to tell me, he said, you will read it in the book.
What made you decide to investigate him?
Well, I was reading his blog and his column in Le Journal de Montréal for maybe a year or something like that. And every time I read things like that, I was thinking to myself, that's incredible, impossible. And I wasn't the only one. I mean, there were a lot of people who had doubts. But nobody did anything, I think, before that, because I don't know actually why. But I think people had something else to do, like me. You know, you're working on something else and you don't have time. You just read it and you say, oh my God, that seems strange. But you keep on your work. And one day, he wrote in a column in the Journal de Montréal that he had an interview with Saif al-Islam, who is a son of Muammar Gaddafi in Libya. And at that time, it was in February, and I said, okay, we really have to do something about that. You know, we have to look into it and try to make an investigation about it, because
it didn't seem possible that Bugingo could obtain an interview with Saif al-Islam in his prison in 2012. Not a single Western journalist had an interview with him since his capture in 2011. So Bugingo just mentioned it at the end of his column this year in February. So it would have been 3 years after the supposed interview. It seems impossible to me. Why didn't he sell his story in 2012? It was a scoop. He could have sold it to the New York Times. Why did he wait 3 years to mention it at the end of a column in Le Journal de Montréal? So that was the starting point of my investigation.
There was a giveaway detail there, wasn't there? Because he said that he had to have a translator for that interview.
I didn't try to catch him. I mean, he just told me that. He just told me that it was not a very easy interview because, one, he was in prison, and two, he had to go through a translator, and the translator haven't had the good English, just like me, I guess. And so I just said, you need a translator. And he said, yes. And it was strange to me because I met Saif al-Islam before Muammar Gaddafi, and I talked to him directly in English. He had a much better English than me, actually.
Yet François Bugingo, he has responded to your exposé. He says he was stunned by the allegations. He says that he plans to thoroughly defend his integrity. He would be on with us now, but for the fact that he has disappeared from public life, he says to prepare his defense. He's going to defend his integrity. It's hard standing from this point. You do a pretty thorough job of detailing some of these transgressions and falsehoods. Could he possibly explain this away? And some people have suggested online, you know, he's a commentator and an analyst. He's a storyteller. People embellish, or they, you know, maybe he's just confused. He mixes up dates. But in essence, he wasn't trying to defraud anyone, that this was a question of sloppiness and not of deceit. Is that, you know, possibly, is he going to be able to get away from this? And is that possibly true?
Well, no, I don't think so. I think he just like fabricate stories. I mean, it's not possible. I don't think he was in Sarajevo in 1993. You know, he told the TVA interview he was there in 1993 in Sarajevo with the sniper shooting, and he was after that drinking with them and playing guitar with them. I mean, he was 18 years old at that time, and he was in Burundi, and he wasn't even a journalist at that time. So, no, I don't think it's sloppiness. I just don't think he was in Sarajevo ever.
It's baffling that he was able to get away with it, if in fact this is all true. You have, as I say, documented this all very thoroughly, but there is a big piece on the other side of the story, which is just how unlikely, how hard it is to believe, that he was filing stories for the biggest news organizations in Quebec, serious journalistic enterprises. He had editors, he had producers, and he's been doing this for years.
Yeah, it's very surprising, actually, but I'm not very... You will have to ask them, I mean, his boss, why they didn't check what he wrote. I mean, I'm not very well placed to talk for them. I mean, I don't know why they didn't check, because there were a lot of suspicion amongst colleagues, and not only in La Presse, you know, I mean, everywhere. But the thing is, in French Canada, and in France, actually, there's no fact-checking that like you have in English Canada and United States and Britain. We don't have that. We don't have fact-checker.
Isabel, we don't have it either. I mean, some magazines have fact-checkers.
No, the Globe and Mail or the Toronto Star will have fact-checker, no?
I think it's a case-by-case basis, but I think as a standard practice, I'm not aware of any newspaper or a TV broadcaster that actually goes through a story fact by fact and gets independent confirmation the way that I've had done to some stories when I've written for magazines. And not all magazines do that either. I want to put this in context of Quebec media. I'm always trying to find ways to explain, I mean, and to learn about for myself. It's just such a different universe you have in Quebec when it comes to the news media and the media in general. And earlier today, you were on 98.5 radio, and the host, Benoît Dutrezac, he really came out at you. He attacked you. And he said that though he's furious with Bugingo himself, he also expressed a lot of anger towards you and said that, you know, what you're doing is you're waging war on Quebecor media properties on behalf of La Presse, that this is just essentially one newspaper taking a shot at another by attacking the reputation of François Bugingo. What do you have to say to that accusation?
I think he was very furious. He was mad at François Bugingo because he had trust in him and he worked with him for years. And he was very emotional. I don't know if you heard everything, but he cried at the end of the after the interview. So I think he was very emotional about that.
We did hear him, you know, defend Bugingo and say whatever he's done, you know, it was blameless. He said something like that, that he never, you know, he never actually extorted anyone, that he didn't harm anyone. What do you think about that?
Well, it's true. You know, he said he didn't kill anybody and he didn't like steal anybody. And well, it's true. What can I say? It's true. But he lied to people. And I think it's our duty as a journalist to expose those kind of things.
You know, it's interesting to this question of how could such a high-profile media personality get away with doing wrong for so long, especially when so many people in the industry, as you say, were aware of it and there was gossip and it was just common knowledge that there were problems with his stories. And it wasn't until you investigated a fellow journalist. I can't help but see parallels. Do you media criticism? Do you see yourself as a journalist who is focused on other journalists? I'm not so familiar.
No, not at all. No, I'm covering international stories. Maybe that's why I was interested in this in François Bugingo, because I know what it is to cover international story and to travel and to do those kind of things. So I thought it was very strange because I did it and I know what it is. So I can't believe that you can be in Misrata the day they're gonna execute someone, you know. Too strange to be true.
What is this pressure that foreign correspondents seem to feel? Like, you know, you're supposed to just be there to report on major world events, but all of a sudden, everyone's Indiana Jones. Everyone is suddenly, they're part of the story. They're negotiating the release of hostages. They're getting shot at. They're part of history. Do you feel that a pressure to put yourself in those stories? Or can you understand or relate to how in the retelling, François Bugingo would make himself into such a romantic figure?
Well, no, I don't relate to it. But I think it's a style, maybe. There's some people want to be like that, and usually it's on TV. I mean, but in the paper, I think it's much less like that, I think.
Yeah. As a TV journalist, it's just such a strange... I mean, wouldn't there have been news crews with him? You have to wonder what's going through his head saying these things and being so flagrant about it when it's so easily, if you start to poke these things and you start to just logically figure out... I know this is the work that you did. You looked at the mileage between cities and, you know, whether these things were even possible, and it all unraveled, you know. It seems very hard to imagine how he's going to explain his way out of this.
Yes, exactly, yeah. Yeah, true.
Are you, you must be in the middle of like a media frenzy right now. How many interviews have you given today?
I think it's my 7th or 8th interview, but I have more tonight and this afternoon, so.
I know it's a hectic day for you. Thanks for sharing this story with us. It's phenomenal. What a story.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Thank you.
Okay, that's your Canada Land Shortcuts. I hope you enjoyed it. You can always email me at jesse@canadalandshow.com. I read everything. I respond when I can. I'm on Twitter @JesseBrown. The website is canadalandshow.com. And the crowdfunding site is patreon.com/CanadaLand. I make the show with Katie Jensen. The next episode of Canada Land will be up on Monday. And the next episode of Canada Land Commons will be up on Tuesday. If you like this show, support it.
Hey, I need you to pay close attention to this message. It is not an ad. This is about Canada Land, and this is about you. You need to know that the news crisis is about to get a lot worse. You've heard about the layoffs. We're about to have news closures, and it's very likely that we're going to be seeing the defunding of the CBC. Where are you going to get your information from? What can you do about this? You can support Canada Land. We need you to. And so for this month and this month only, you can become a Canada Land supporter and get everything our supporters get for just $2 a month. That is an almost 80% discount. The clock is ticking on this. It disappears at the end of the month, and then we will not offer it. We need your support. We need to keep news coverage alive in Canada. Go right now to canadaland.com/join. And thank you.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.